adhyahara prayasas cha prajalpa niyamagraha. So niyama, Prabhupada used to like this one, niyama agraha and niyama agraha. There's two different meanings to this one. Niyama means rules and regulations, where one performs them fastidiously without understanding the purpose behind them, or neglects them. In either case, it's a detriment to bhakti. So I'll start what this, how to understand this particular category, niyama, niyamagraha. On the performing without understanding the purpose behind the niyama, or the regulation, the rule of regulation, that's just mechanical execution of duties in Krishna consciousness. And mechanical execution of duties doesn't yield a higher taste. So it's hard to continue when you don't get any real taste from those activities. So the fault is not understanding the purpose behind the activity. And so then one will either neglect the activity or continue performing it, not getting a taste for that activity. So the cure, or the not committing that fault, is carefully understand what's the purpose behind something. Answer the why questions, like people always ask, educated people always ask why. You're trained to ask why, so you ask why. Why? And until you understand why, and then when the why is there, carry that understanding with you. Meditate upon the purpose. Carry the consciousness of that purpose with you into the activity. And like Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. Think of the purpose behind the activity that you're doing. Or using a phrase that's out there, a buzzword these days, is be present. Instead of being absent, like anybody home, nobody's there. Doing something mechanically without being present while you're doing that something. A scriptural example that I like is Krishna asking Nanda Maharaj the purpose behind the Indra Yajna. And he says to Krishna, I'm your son. I'm your little boy. And you're my father. And it's the duty of the father to explain to the son the purpose behind all the activities that we do. Because if one does activities and doesn't understand the purpose behind the activities, even they're doing the activity, they don't get the full benefit. So my dear father, please explain to me the purpose behind this yajna that you're arranging. So, same way, I'd like to invoke a little mindfulness amongst all of us. What's the purpose of what we're doing right now? And there are different ideas that unconsciously or mindlessly, I guess, we could be carrying into some activity like this. Some persons, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, there's some initial purposes why individuals may take up devotional service. They're suffering, they don't want to suffer. So, while it's true that engaging in this particular activity can help us limit our suffering, there's higher purposes than that. Or just so that we can one of the conditionings that we're all accustomed to or trained up in is just learning things. So this is in the category another something that you're supposed to learn. Knowledge for knowledge's sake, Professor Durkheim was saying. Just it's what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to learn this. And that's a very strong, I find, a very strong conditioned tendency. Or so that you can quote something, speak something, and be respected amongst the circle of Vaishnavas because you can quote something, speak something. Like a little honor amongst the Sangha of devotees because I can speak something, quote something. Those are performing without understanding the purpose behind. So the purpose behind is Rupa Goswami is giving us some very, very, very important and Bhaktivinoda Thakur very carefully detailed descriptions of instructions that will help make us more qualified to receive all the fullness of the mercy that Lord Chaitanya wanted us to have and receive from him. It's to make us more eligible to receive that mercy. And with that mindfulness, we should take up hearing these things and then applying what we've understood. One practical example that we find coming in our Vaishnava calendar regularly is observing Ekadasi. I'll give another one. Satsura Maharaj, I remember his speaking about every day in our temples, we come before the deities and we take part in the deity greeting program. And it's really easy to do something like that mindlessly. At 7 o'clock, the conch blows. Gaura Gopal blasts the conch like it's an elephant calling the other elephants in the rest of the city to come to greet the deities. Then everybody comes to the temple room. And then we play the Govinda. The curtain opens. We play the Govinda prayers. Everyone pays obeisances. And you stand there with folded hands doing something. And then the next deities and takes your number. There's a ritual that we observe. So I heard Satsura Maharaj give a lecture on just that part of our daily program. What are we doing? How many days can we mindlessly go through that activity in a ritualistic way? Or I'll give another example. One morning after Prabhupada's morning walk, he was visiting in our temple in New York, and for some reason he was in a particular mood to train us in Krishna consciousness, and he greeted the deities, went back and sat on the Vyasasan. There was Kirtan, Guru Puja. And right in the middle of Guru Puja, he stopped the kirtan. Right in the middle of the Guru Puja, he stopped the kirtan. And they asked, what is the meaning of something that we just said? And it just, the Prabhupada's mood paralyzed everybody. And then he was exhibiting transcendental anger, and he said, you're singing this song every morning and you do not know its meaning? Everyone paralyzed further. What is the meaning? And he's a particular verse. And I remember Vaikunthanath, Prabhupada's disciple, he spoke the meaning. I mean, that was very bold of him. He knew the meaning, but just, you know, we were all paralyzed. And he spoke the meaning, and Prabhupada said, yes. And they explained the meaning, then continue. So we were all like, when's the next time he's going to stop and ask us what's the meaning? But he wanted us to not be mindless. He wanted us to be present when we're speaking these words, singing these words. What's the meaning? What are we doing? Because it's very easy to become a bit ritualistic in our approach to practicing Krishna consciousness. Are we going to try or not?
Everybody in DC is in the temple. Premanda Mataji is not at home. So I asked you to call here, so she'll be the only one who should.
All right, fine. as Krishna Leela too. No, she, anyway, that's okay. Okay. So, Ekadasi, another example. Every fortnight we observe Ekadasi. And what are we supposed to be doing on Ekadasi? Well, we know we're supposed to be fasting from beans and grains. So we can get some benefit by fasting from beans and grains, and we can get some the opposite of benefit by eating beans and grains. But what's the purpose behind it? It's so repeatedly you read Prabhupada's books reasonably carefully, and you'll find again and again and again he refers to observing appearance days of the Lord and observing Ekadasi as opportunities, traditional or sanctified opportunities for devotees of the Lord to engage in austerities that help them control their mind and senses and increase their devotion to Krishna by increasing their hearing and chanting. So it's a very specially empowered day to increase our Krishna consciousness. And if we approach Ekadasi in that way, we can get more and more up to full benefit from observing Ekadasi. We're going to hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak something further about Ekadasi in the Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat section. It's very helpful for devotion, but it's also very helpful if we're mindful of the purpose. Because there are observances of Ekadasi where the idea is it's supposed to hurt. Ekadasi is, we used to think like that. Prabhupada had to explain to us, no, it's not that Ekadasi is supposed to hurt. Or it's just a bad day, that's why you have to fast, because it's a bad day. We were observing no beans and grains, thinking things like that. It's for increasing our devotion to Krishna. So if we're mindful, it's a very, very effective, specially empowered day for that purpose. Carry that consciousness with you into that observing Ekadasi. And the reverse understanding is also there, that is neglecting. I shouldn't neglect observing the niyamas, thinking that it's unimportant. Just thinking of them in some material way, it's external, it's unimportant. They're helpful. They're prescribed. Certain those things that are niyamas, they're prescribed because it helps us come to the stage of devotion. So, and if we neglect them, our bhakti is harmed. So those are just some general remarks. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his covering of this, he calls it his essays, a collection of essays, and the essay on this niyama topic, he describes briefly that there are three stages of spiritual elevation, from going from the unregulated masses to those that follow rules of conduct, to those who are situated in knowledge, to those who become elevated in devotion, so karma, jnana, and bhakti. And each one of those three positions, they have their niyamas. In the beginning of the chapter, he indicates there's two kinds of niyama. That's things you should do, the do's and the don'ts. Prescriptions and the prohibitions. The prescriptions are vidhis, like we practice vaidhi sadhana bhakti. So with those vidhis, or the injunctions, the things that you're supposed to do, there's also things you're not supposed to do. The Sanskrit term is nishedhas, or prohibitions. So when we say niyama, it means both, the do's and the don'ts. And there are particular niyamas for each of those positions. many of the devotees here have heard this introduction to the sixth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, the first chapter of the sixth canto, where Shukadeva Goswami is responding to Maharaj Pariksit's question, what will help persons not have to experience the hellish planets? Because he described that in the end of the fifth canto. So he describes same karma, jnana, and bhakti. So, and there's things to be done with the karma section, things to be done with the jnana section. And with the jnana section, this tapasya brahmacharjena samena cha devena cha tyagena satya shochabhyam yamena niyamena va. These are, Prabhupada calls, these are the regulative principles of knowledge. You say the niyama. Tapasya, undergoing austerity, is recommended for those that are cultivating knowledge. Student life, students should live simply and accept that position of, and generally, well, often is like that, austere. There are austerities that student life entails. And celibacy, brahmacharjena, in student life, recommended. It helps one be able to concentrate nicely on one's studies. And failing to do so makes it hard to concentrate on one's studies. And so forth. So those niyamas are not obligatory in the same way as for the person in jnana as they are for the person in bhakti. But the person in bhakti may very well observe them. Tapasya, brahmacharya, samena, dhamena, and so forth. But there are other primary principles in the pursuit of bhakti that those are subservient to. So I want to particularly, for the sake of appreciating Bhaktivinoda Thakur's style, I'd like to pass out just some quotes, because not everybody has a book, and I excerpted some from the first few pages of this chapter, and I want to directly read from it. And we'll make a little bit of comment. So as soon as everybody has a copy. Well, actually, I'll summarize it first while it's being passed out. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes several points. What you're going to hear is as follows. We're going to read together. Is that there are these three stages, karma, jnana, and bhakti, that all scriptures identify. And there are rules and regulations that pertain to them. Are we running out? Is there more? Okay. So some of the men can share so that some of the ladies over here can have. Okay. Okay, here we go. You have one? You have a copy? Okay, you need a paper. One more paper and we're all set. Okay, here we go. I'm going to read out loud. Conditioned souls. Listen to the logic, the art of humble persuasion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Conditioned souls are eligible to attain a very exalted position from a very low position. Between these two positions, there are many other positions. Each position is a gradual step. Each gradual step is a distinct level of advancement. Each and every gradual step has different prescriptions and prohibitions. Whenever a living entity steps to one level and stays there, he is obliged to follow the prescriptions and prohibitions of that step. By following those enjoined prescriptions and prohibitions, one becomes eligible to attain the next step. If one is unable to attain the next step, he falls down to a lower step. This is called degradation. Attaining the higher step is called advancement. Very logical, very clear. To properly follow the precepts of one's own level is called one's prescribed duties, or steadiness in one's position. Steadiness in one's own position is piety, and deviation from one's position is impiety. There is no other piety and impiety than this. And then I eliminated it, but he makes a very strong statement, and he quotes from Krishna speaking to Uddhava in the 11th canto, and it's exactly the same understanding. Then he goes on. According to the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, and all the Smritis, three principal divisions are found, karma, jnana, and bhakti. In each division, certain prescriptions and prohibitions are enjoined. In the karma division, the rules of varnashram and the 10 supplementary sangskaras, as well as regulative prayers, are prescribed. That's the injunction and the prohibition. Sins and bad habits are prohibited. In the jnana division, sannyas, renunciation, detachment, and discussing matter and spirit are prescribed, forbidden. Fruitive activities, forbidden activities, and attachment to sense enjoyment are prohibited. In the bhakti division, indifference, performance of activities favorable to devotion, following the prescriptions and prohibitions of the jnana division, and cultivating devotional service with the help of those prescriptions and prohibitions are prescribed. All activities opposed to the Lord, jnana, renunciation, attachment to those to sense enjoyment, conclusions opposed to devotional service, and giving up action are prohibited. So he's stated a principle. Now he's delineating in these three groups. Here's the prohibitions and the prescriptions. When the conditioned soul advances by giving up illicit activities, low-class character, then he attains the level of karmakanda. Such a person should remain in varnashram dharma and aspire to attain the level of jnana. This is his duty. He should remain in varnashrama until he attains detachment from material activities by discussing the difference between matter and spirit and analyzing the nature of false ego, otherwise he becomes sinful. If he doesn't do that which is prescribed, he'll fall back to the lower and become sinful. When that detachment is attained, then his higher qualification destroys his attachment to fruitive activities. But if that person still remains inclined to the rules of karmakanda, then he cannot make advancement. Like the inchworm has to reach out to the next leaf or twig or branch, and then once securing that new position, let go of the other position, otherwise he can't advance. Hind legs have to join the front legs. The duty of one who has attained the level of jnanakanda is to remain fixed in knowledge. Until he attains a taste for devotional service, he should remain under the rules of jnanakanda. As soon as the qualifications for devotional service manifests, he should give up his attachment for jnanakanda, otherwise he is guilty of niyamagraha and will not make advancement. And this last statement, actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts it earlier, but in sequence it also follows. In the eternal state of living entity, prema is the only prescription and envy is the only prohibition. Point out that in this paragraph that begins, when the conditioned soul advances by giving up illicit activities, it's a restatement of Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Showing yesham tandagatam papam jananam punya karmanam, so that's karmakanda. for performing those prescribed duties, punya karma activities, while cultivating knowledge of matter and spirit, because otherwise you'll fall back to sinful activities. Getting that matter and spirit understanding, one becomes then free from duality, te, dvandva, moha, nirmukta. He becomes more situated in knowledge. And when that position becomes ripened or mature, bhajante mam vridavrata. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making very simple for any person that may not be a highly intellectual person but has some faith in the scripture, some very simple understanding. So this niyama agraha, he's expanding further that we need to understand, particularly for those performing bhakti, this bhakti loka is advice by Rupa Goswami how to perform bhakti. What are the niyamas that as bhaktas we should be following? And sometimes I find devotees become a little perplexed because they know that there's some karmakanda ritual or standard about something. And are we supposed to do this something? And what about another something and another something? And sometimes devotees become very involved in those other somethings. And they do so without understanding the purpose behind them, nor understanding what are the niyamas for a performer of bhakti. And there's this worship and that ritual and this fasting and this way we used to do it, my grandmother used to and the pundit used to, and on and on. One will not advance unless one understands the purpose behind those things and according is realistic about one's position and is able to take shelter of one's actual position. I'll give some practical examples. In our GBC meetings about 4 years ago, there was a concern in Australia that their deity, Radha Krishna deity, where the deity holds, Krishna holds the flute, the thumb had broken many times. And it was very, very painful for the devotees to put the flute in Krishna's hand and see the thumb of Krishna fall to the floor, and then they would put the... So they had a discussion in Australia, should we replace the deity, and some said this and some said that, and they couldn't resolve it, so they brought it to the GBC to resolve that question. And it got resolved this way. There are statements found in Hari Bhakti Vilas that when the deity is broken, here's the procedure to replace the deity with another deity, because when the deity is broken, that's what you do. Then there's another place in Hari Bhakti Vilas that says when one is on a platform of devotional service where one sees the deity as Krishna, then like a mother who sees that their child has some damage, they repair the damage to their child. They don't throw the child away and get another child. Their child. So, in the end of Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatana Goswami writes that these principles need to be applied under the direction of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master directs according to the faith of the disciple. So, according to the faith of the disciple, there are different injunctions, even for Vaishnavas. And which one should be done, one should follow according to the indication of the spiritual master. When I was a very new devotee, practically the first week that I was a devotee, I was sent with Karuna Moya, one of Prabhupada's disciples, on a very interesting expedition. We went the Subhadra deity on the altar had somehow been damaged. And I didn't know that. I didn't know what was going on. I was just, you know, ride with Krutamoya, see you later. So when we took for a, it was in Boston, we took a long drive way out into Timbuktu, out the outskirts of Boston. We drove by the Charles River, drove the car right over by the Charles River. He opened up the trunk and pulled Lady Subhadra out of the trunk. I didn't know what was going on. And then put Lady Subhadra in a burlap bag with some big stones and tied up the burlap bag. And he told me, you know, that's one, two, three. And into the river. So that Lady Subhadra could be replaced with another Lady Subhadra because the deity was damaged. So, not, so I didn't. Okay, Hare Krishna. In Los Angeles, maybe some of you can remember this, there was an earthquake in California some years ago, and the Jagannath and Balaram deities were damaged on the altar. And there was this big discussion. Should we replace the deity? Should we repair the deity? And they went through the same discussion, and there's, it says this and it says that. So what they decided to do was they repaired Jagannath, and for some time continued to worship while another Jagannath was being carved, and then that new Jagannath deity was placed on the altar and the other Jagannath deity was put somewhere where the deity is not being worshipped. But there are many other situations where Prabhupada specifically said to repair the deity in this other mood where this is your worshipable form. You don't throw your worshipable form away. And so it's a more intimate mood of worship. So Prabhupada instructed differently in different situations according to the level that he understood his disciples had attained, or that what he wanted them to attain, wanted them to follow. So there are different, even for Vaishnavas, there are different niyamas, and we should respect and understand those indications. So that are given by scripture through the medium of the representative of the scripture, the spiritual master. I want to just now review the points that from what we read, from what Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. There's these different stages, three primary, and of course he doesn't indicate it, but there's sub-stages within those stages. Not that all devotees are on the same platform, we just indicated. Or all jnanis are on the same platform, although those performing karmakanda are on the same platform. And they're niyamas, the regulations that should be observed. They're meant to help us go further in these different ways. By being pious and free from sinful activity, jananam punya karmanam, but also come to an understanding of that which is eternal. By that detachment from sinful activity, become more situated in goodness. From the platform of goodness, become more situated in a place where you can understand what is eternal, the soul. And as that understanding comes, one can move from those fruitive activities of karmakanda to the jnanakanda position. He indicates in the bhakti position, though these activities of, in the paper that we handed out, the activities of, the standards of jnana performance may also be observed, tapasya, brahmacharya, etc. But that's not the essence of the life of bhakti. The life of bhakti essence, he indicates that after this little section that we just read, actually the real essence of it is faith. I'll read. Now, for those of you that have books, it's at the bottom of page 25. As long as one is not satiated by fruitive activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of Vedic injunctions. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Then Bhaktivinoda's comment, Shraddha or faith is the only qualification for bhakti. If one doesn't have faith, in bhakti. One's faith in bhakti has not been aroused through hearing and chanting, then one is obliged to follow all the duties of the varna ashram system. But when one's faith has awakened, and this is where Prabhupada focused his followers, particularly in the West and elsewhere, he inculcated great faith in his followers in the chanting of the holy name and hearing from the scriptures. That's where he started. And so he didn't teach us all of the details of varna and ashram. He just didn't give all that stuff to us. Later on, he saw some of his followers don't have sufficient capacity even to chant their rounds and chant their gayatris and follow the principles. They need the varnashram system. But one who has sufficient faith can simply engage in those activities. Hearing and chanting, shravanam kirtan, bhagavat dharma system. I'll give another example of differing regulations. There was one very elderly lady in our New York congregation whose husband died, and she wanted to know, should she visit the temple? She had sponsored a feast in honor of her deceased husband, and some persons were advising her, no, according to the scriptures, you shouldn't enter the temple so many days after a deceased relative. And others were saying that in all circumstances, you should go before the deity. You purify your existence. Then the individual asked me. I discussed it with some other senior Vaishnavas, and the answer that I gave was, depends upon your faith. Or just, I asked the question, in which of these, what is, I asked her what her faith was. In her particular case, she felt stronger faith in not going to the temple and observing that regulation. But if her faith had the indication of faith was, I want the purification that comes from being before Radha Govinda and honoring them, worshipping them. She had, one has great, great, great feelings for the deity, faith in this. Then that recommendation can be given depending upon the faith. And Prabhupada did this, practically speaking, again and again. He would give different instructions to different disciples, recognizing their different levels of faith. One that comes to mind is Prabhupada speaking very, very strongly about the uselessness of taking up the medium of Western music in the name of trying to propagate Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was speaking so strongly about it, and the same day a disciple had just become married, and he and his wife came to Prabhupada, and he requested permission from Prabhupada to do exactly that which Prabhupada was saying not to do. And Prabhupada said, very well. And after the person left, Hari Sori said, Prabhupada, you just said this and then you said that. And Prabhupada's reply was, because if I said no, he would have done it anyways. And then he would have been worse. So according to the position of faith. So what can elevate one to the higher standard is faith. Faith in the spiritual master. Because the indication given by the spiritual master is in part is an understanding of the position of the condition, in this case psychophysical condition of that particular disciple, but also their quality of faith. They would not have strong enough faith to follow that instruction had the instruction been given. So what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting here is something that is kind of like a theme in, or a refrain, a recurring message that he would give, and that message is that progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. The phrase that's used these days is baby steps. Or that we do it all the time in Krishna consciousness. We encourage people, just take these beads and chant one round a day, or two rounds a day, or four rounds a day, and see what happens, see how you like that. With the understanding that they should do that and do that faithfully, we encourage like that. And it's not, we're judging them or we're tricking them. We're giving them something that's according to their capacity to do, and then gradually, incrementally, their advancement will take place. And even in so many matters, in management matters, in maybe in approach to life. I speak like this with my GBC godbrothers. I'm an incrementalist. I don't believe in radical changes. I don't believe it's going to hold. I believe in making little steps in the right direction, making progress that way, because that's how life is. Trees don't grow to become bearing of fruits and flowers like that because you want it. You just stick one in the ground and make it grow. It doesn't happen like that. Life comes about by gradual, natural changes. And if we approach life and approach our life and devotion that way, and approach our relationships with others and improving everything that we want to see improved in that manner, it's effective. Our own lives included, just like Annapurna's question yesterday about, seeing many things that we may want to do to improve ourselves in Krishna consciousness. That was the response that I gave. We'll move in steps, take something that's doable and move forward with that. And then on to the next thing. Don't, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was warning here, don't stay stuck. Or the last purport in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if one stops at a particular stage of yoga, one's identified according to that stage of yoga. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga, or dhyana yoga, bhakti. So the yoga ladder is, if one is progressive, one will continue right to the conclusion. Or in Rupa Goswami's teachings, we may be in the most neophyte position, but if we understand the goal and we're cultivating towards that goal, that's uttam bhakti. Although it may be in increments with little steps. But as we're making the little steps, you need to. So be steady in the performance of your duties at a particular standard. If it's 8 rounds a day, it's 8 rounds a day. You don't go backwards. But you should aspire for 12, 16 rounds a day and continuing further. And so on with all aspects of devotional life. Maintain standards with steadiness and aspire for higher, and take a step that's a doable step. Go that doable step and be steady in that doable step, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, it makes you eligible for the next step. And devotional service is either, there's another something that Prabhupada essentially said, you're either in Krishna consciousness, you're either progressing or you're regressing. There's no standing still. Treading water in a moving river, you're downstream. In the material atmosphere, you need to be striving to become more fixed in the mood of devotion, the mood of service. Just like this other question. If you go into the workplace thinking good thoughts, but you turn the light out and become mindless, you're swept downstream. So we always have to be trying to progress in our Krishna consciousness. That's what this, the cure from the Niyama Agraha position is. Striving to progress in Krishna consciousness, taking the assistance of rules and regulations, not just neglecting them because, oh, they're burdensome, or I don't need them or something. striving to come to this position that he's indicated. The final position is where there's love in my heart for Krishna, and the prohibition is there's no envy. There's no envy of Krishna and that which is in relation to Krishna, particularly Krishna's devotees. At least I need to strive for that objective. I want to read one other thing and we're done with this. On page 26, the paragraph that starts with Shraddha, I'd like to read that, those of you that have books. Shraddha is the only rule for people established on the level of bhakti. As anarthas or unwanted habits are destroyed by the power of devotional service performed under the shelter of sadhu and guru, that Shraddha transforms into devotional service. With nishtha, or firm faith, as the anarthas are further destroyed, one progresses from the level of nishtha to ruchi, from ruchi to asakti, from asakti to bhava. When bhava is in the form of rati, or affection, is mixed with the appropriate ingredients, it becomes rasa. So what he's saying here is faith. So you have to carry that faith in Guru and Krishna and the process of devotional service, the process of connecting with Krishna. Carry that faith with you into those prescribed activities, the niyamas, and anarthas are removed. This is the constitutional solution to things unwanted. With faith, take up the instructions that you receive. Faith in the objective is real and attainable. Faith in the persons who are assisting you in achieving that objective. And mindful, being faithful in executing those activities. The anarthas, unwanted things, dissipate. So we can take into our assistance conditional measures. They are given some strength to the degree that there is the spiritual or the constitutional endeavor. And then we can move forward up to the stage of prema. And then he quotes from Padma Purana and we're done. Padma Purana is being quoted on page 27 towards the bottom. The translation or the summary: Smartavyaks satatam Vishnur Vismartavyo najatu chit sarve vidhi nishedhasyor etayor eva kinkara. Remembering Krishna is the eternal duty. The way the Rupa Goswami says, there's 64 items for devotional service, things that are to be done. There's one rule behind all of them. That's this one: remember Krishna and don't forget him. It's very similar to the notion of faith. Faithfully, the niyamas that we do take up should be done with the understanding of the purpose, remembering Krishna. And by doing these things carefully, it will help me remember Krishna. And if I neglect them, my remembrance of Krishna will get covered. Or if I just do them mindlessly, my taste for being in devotion to Krishna won't happen. And I'll neglect them. I'll give up Krishna also. Or Krishna in a circumscribed way. Some secular way. But Krishna consciousness is not a secular religion. Krishna consciousness is a moment to moment. How to be always mindful of Krishna. Teaching. There's actually one other final thing. He says that the regulations that we find, this is on page 28, the regulations that we find in Hari Bhakti Vilas, according to Sanatana Goswami, they're mainly for householders. Because householders have this position of needing to regulate their desires and their involvements, and they don't pertain to renunciates in the same way. However, the indication of Sanatana Goswami is renunciates may very well follow them because other persons may imitate the renunciates. So they maintain these principles because it's good. It's instructive for others. But the mandate is not the same for them. The last paragraph. The conclusion is that the practitioner attains a higher level as a result of his following rules prescribed according to his qualification. He should not maintain attachment for the rules of his previous level. Keeping this instruction always in mind, he should always engage in chanting and remembering Lord Krishna and thus continue advancing to higher levels. Very nice. Very, very practical. Very detailed, comprehensive instructions Rupa Goswami is giving. Rupa Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur are giving us. I like this book very much. Very, very, very helpful. So, any discussion? Yeah.
And the last paragraph itself, it says, when you go to another level, you should not follow the prescribed rules of the...
Should not maintain attachment. Oh, it's okay.
To the last...
Following the rules prescribed according to his qualification.
Say, if a devotee is on the level of anathanivritti, so how, which rules he should not follow of the last level?
It means, you know, it means the strictures for karma and jnana particularly. It's my understanding of that statement is it's referring to the stages of karma and jnana, not to the previous. Because the other way, for the process of bhakti, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, it's always that what Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur says is the unfolding of bhakti is like, is compared to a seed that sprouts and continues to grow and eventually produces fruits, flowers and fruits. But the remarkable quality of this bhakti lata is that whatever is existing at the earlier stages continues at the next stage. So the seed, the sprout, the little plant, that's, they're all there throughout the whole stages, whereas you don't see that. You look at the tree outside, you don't see a little, see the tree. But so bhakti is distinct. Shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, they're there in the anarthanivritti stage.
So how is
this? This instruction means that we should not maintain attachments for the jnana path and the karma kanda path, because that does, I hear it from the devotees asking, should we observe this particular fast? Or someone says, you know, for my whole life on Tuesdays I observe fast for something. Do I, am I offending that somebody if I don't observe Tuesday fast? And so forth, like that. So when you're in the stage of bhajana kriya and anarthanivritti, you need not observe the regulations of karma kanda or jnana kanda. Anyone else? Yeah.
Sometimes, like unknowingly, I heard somewhere from one devotee that somebody did this Ekadashi fasting unknowingly and they got liberated. So,
well, there's a scriptural story about Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life unknowingly engaging in fasting, full fasting on Ekadashi. And he got great spiritual benefit to indicate the potency. So there is certainly potency even in unknowingly doing things. That's called Agata Sukriti. But Agata Sukriti is not the same as knowingly with full devotion observing those activities. The efficacy is not equal. Now there may be circumstances where some special kripa is there, where someone just gets liberated. So that's also there in an exceptional way. Like Prabhupada gives the example that someone may be awarded a diploma, an honorary graduation from Oxford University, like Elton John just got one a few years back. You know, who knows what his consciousness is, but he was awarded. One should not count on that. One should enroll and take one's exams. So there may be some exceptions. Yes. What was your example? You sometimes.
For example, one is overeating. One thinks that I'm not overeating because.
Okay. That's called anishtita bhakti, where one of the characteristics of unsteady devotion or anishtita is inability to uphold vows, and the other is the inability to check bad tendencies. The problem, so what's being recommended here is don't give up. But with faith, following indications that you shouldn't overeat, continue to make that effort with faith, following the indications that Scripture provided, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra provide you. With faith, continue. And that will bring you to the nishtha, beyond the anishtita stage. The problem is not being intermittent in your determination. The problem was just to give up. There's one devotee that I know who said, I've been chanting Hare Krishna mantra for 15 years and I still don't have a taste, so I'm going to stop chanting. And he forbade the members of his household to chant. And his life went pew. Then he realized, I have to start chanting again. Now he's much more determined in his efforts to chant effectively. Not only because he bottomed out, but realizes there has to be a sincere, he has to avoid the 10 offenses, not just chant. So he's much more conscientious in avoiding the 10 offenses. The other examples, but we need to continue to strive. We may be struggling against residual tendencies of the past, like Prabhupada's example, the fan where the blades continue to spin even though you've unplugged the fan. Know that residual tendency will diminish. Have faith that when you pull the plug, you don't plug back in again, the blades of the fan will slow down and stop. one of Newton's laws of physics, it's going to happen. Just don't plug in again. Same for our life and spiritual practices. That stage is a stand, what you just described, everybody in this room knows that stage. We're very familiar with that territory. It's called anishtha. There's a name for it. And continue practicing. Even their setback, continue to practice. Prabhupada's example is like a child learning to walk. Walking propensity is there, therefore however many times they may tumble and fall, the parents don't become discouraged, they take their little hands and pick them up and start walking them again until the walking propensity comes out fully. They can keep their balance and keep walking. Devotional tendency is also there. The ability to conquer these misgivings, it's there. It's within the soul and it's awakened by the process of bhakti. Having faith in that, continue. And the anishtha stage is surpassed because anarthas are removed by that process of bhakti itself. And you're on the other side. You can hear it from scripture, you can see it in the examples of others. That's one of the very strong faith builders, is to see persons actually become accomplished in this process. Why we need exemplary devotees. We need to be examples for others, just like this discussion about in the workplace. Society needs beacons of light. And householders move all throughout society. So, become an example for others. Be Krishna conscious, that's a great service. And is it possible to be Krishna conscious in that situation? Sure. There are examples. Take inspiration from those examples and follow the instructions faithfully, and one can be in that position. An instrument of Lord Chaitanya in the world. And in control of these misgivings of life. Anything else? Yes? Indifference. It's two kinds of things. Indifference towards things, like not getting excited when you see gold, and not so excited when you see a pebble. You know, that kind of indifference to. Wealth, you know, to duality. Things that seem like an opportunity for sense gratification, get excited about it. Or, like, retching with aversion towards something that's the opposite. You could see, according to how Krishna sees, here's the mode of goodness, here's the mode of passion, here's the mode of ignorance. To see how marvelous Krishna is, such a display of varieties he has. Seeing through knowledge. So that's jnana mishra bhakti, but that's one kind of neutrality or indifference. And in a broader sense, it's as was discussed, seeing, making this distinction of intelligence. Things that are on the spiritual side, like Kirtida's question, here's a spirit soul that's part and parcel of Krishna. They have an eternal relationship with Krishna. I'm not indifferent to that. And there's feelings connected with that attachment to that soul. And it's like Queen Kunti is praying to separate the material affection that she has from the spiritual affection for, that she has for the Pandavas and the Rishis. Be indifferent on the material affection side. That may also help you with the question that you had. So that's not easy, but that's our assignment. That's the cultivation that we have to have.
And just a clarification, I've heard this concept about 3 times. I'm not able to clearly understand spiritual compassion. Just now you're referring to material affection and spiritual affection. Suppose a colleague in a workplace, could you explain how, you know, one can be really affectionate or spiritually affectionate?
I was going to give a real life example, but I think I won't do it. Just a theoretical example. In the workplace, you have somebody that you've developed a rapport with, and as the material world has it, there's some calamity, some terrible calamity, death or teenage problem or domestic problem, spouse problem, something very, very horrific, something, and they share that with you. Now, because there's some affinity for the person, there's some empathy for their situation. One should, in a circumstance like that, you have an opportunity to fall right into the same kind of lamentation they're into, or you have the opportunity but to be fixed in Krishna consciousness, empathize on one level with the problem, but out of spiritual compassion, try to, as circumstance permits and as the faith of the individual permits, that you can take it as a window of opportunity to bring them in that calamity to a heightened awareness of shelter of God. Because after all these things are temporary, etc. Which may seem, depending upon circumstance, it may seem like insensitive. But it's not insensitive, it's acutely sensitive to the real root of the problem. The complexities of life are there because we've forgotten Krishna. We got a material body, and we have to go through this stuff. So that takes some expertise as a preacher. It also takes a lot of Krishna consciousness. But there's some example. It's not that as Vaishnavas, we're callous. We don't care. Our hearts are hard to the turmoil of being in the material world, our colleagues in the workplace or any other place. The Vaishnava is never callous at any level. So that indifference is, I'm not pushed and pulled. I'm not energized or de-energized by those material circumstances. I can see them for what they are, and I see what's behind the problem. This person is suffering a lot. They're suffering because of illusion. So while I may be, you know, I'm entering into their little dreamlike illusion and speaking some words to them to can pacify them so their dream isn't such a bad dream. That's not my real business. Spiritual compassion is my real business. But I want to have to do that expertly. Because otherwise, they won't, you know, they'll take it the wrong way. They'll take it as callous. Or something. But at least, regardless of what we say and do, that we carry that consciousness, spiritual compassion, and not get into somebody's bad dream. It's true, it's a delicate balance. So this one more, or you're okay?
I have to think about it more.
Okay. So RT begins at 6 o'clock, and it's 10 to 6, 12 to 6. So we'll close up.